Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I think that, you know, we are of two different generations. Mm-hmm. I think that I probably didn't give myself permission to even question those things so much. You know, not like my mother's generation, but I think your generation is, I think you all have more freedom to kind of, you all inherently have a little different built-in dialogue, which isn't to say that you're not going to struggle about those questions, because I think that you're better at giving yourself permission to have that struggle.
You know, we have a whole program called Taking Up Space in our artist community. It's like, we're not afraid to take up space. Yeah. At least we're working on that, you know?
Yeah.
Like we're
I think
kind
that's
of in
a great
the,
thing.
Yeah, like we're kind of in this moment of, we know what our parents' generation was like, and we know what we want our daughter's generation to be like. And so we're trying to claim it, you know?
And I think that, you know, isn't that a grand, I mean, it is a, it's a great thing. Mm-hmm. And it'll be great for your daughters too.
Friends, I'm thrilled to welcome artist mother Camille Warmington to the podcast today. Camille is a painter whose work reflects on artifacts and their connection to memory and mortality, place, and presence. She studied painting at the Glassell School of Art at the Museum of Fine Arts in Houston and earned a Bachelor of Interior Architecture from Kansas State University. Her paintings have appeared in national, regional, and local juried exhibitions, been featured in New American Paintings, and received a Hunting Prize nomination. Camille is the mother to three, and she was born in Massachusetts. She grew up in Texas, and she currently lives and works in New York City and Rhinebeck, New York. So quite a vast array of experiences there in the U.S. Camille, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm so happy to have you and to chat a bit about your work and your life. Always love to start by asking if you feel like there's a connection to your life as an artist now with your childhood. Did you, you know, grow up knowing that you wanted to be an artist, or how did that idea kind of come to be?
You know, I grew up wanting to be a designer. I used to draw floor plans. And I think art kind of evolved out of that. There's obviously a lot of drawing. I mean, back in the day, this would have been in the early 80s, you know, architecture was still very much pencil and, T-squares and triangles. We weren't using CAD systems then.
Right.
And so there was always a big component of art my educational background. I had a great aunt who painted. She was a teacher in Indiana. And I have visceral memories of being in her house and the smell of oil paint. And, my mother was creative. So I had access to materials, which, you know, was lucky. Mm-hmm. I had wonderful art teachers in grade school and high school. So
how did you end up from growing up in Massachusetts and then you went to architecture school in Kansas, right?
Yeah.
That seems a bit of a distance.
Well, my father was in the Navy.
Okay.
So he was stationed out of Massachusetts. That's why I was born up there.
Okay.
And then my mother grew up in Texas. My father grew up in Illinois. He went to graduate school in Oklahoma and then moved to Dallas for a job.
Okay.
So my childhood was spent Most of it was spent in Dallas after, I think we moved to Dallas when I was about 4 years old.
Okay. So then how did you end up, you know, you kind of went to undergrad for architecture.
Yeah. Kansas State, Kansas State was, it's a beautiful little school in the Flint Hills of Kansas. And my senior year, I was just looking for something different. Most of my peers were going to University of Texas or SMU. And I just, K-State had a specific program of interior architecture, which was kind of unusual. It's a 5-year program within the college, along with architecture and landscape architecture. And there weren't that many programs like that across the country.
Okay.
And I visited and fell in love with it, you know.
Awesome.
And off I went. Didn't know anyone, but, you know, had a great experience. Great.
Okay. And then did you become an architect and start a career in architecture?
I did. I practiced really. So I practiced with a firm in Dallas. And gosh, it would have been, you know, this firm ended up having financial problems and it disbanded. And about that time I started having kids and had my first two kids back to back and then kind of did a design practice of my own,
an interior
with people
design
that I was meeting. By this time I moved to Houston, just doing interior design. So, and I did that in, you know, for probably about 8 or 10 years. And then just wanted to do something different. I started with a watercolor class that I wanted to get into, and it was full. And this was at the Glassell School in Houston. They said, well, why don't you try this class with Terrell James, who's a abstract painter out of Texas. And, you know, it was kind of a pivot point for me. She was she is still, but was very influential in kind of building an art practice and how I saw painting. And so I felt very lucky to have that initial roadblock that I wasn't able to get into and you know, just opened my eyes to how to look at art, how to think about art, which is, I you know, a big part of it, the practice.
Okay, so I'm holding this pin in this place in your life where you've been like an architect and designer for like 8 or 10 years. You have a couple kids. You're thinking about, you know, art and pursuing a career in art. Before we come back to kind of that moment, can you describe your work now? What are you making? What kind of processes do you use? What does your work look like?
So my primary body of work right now is, it is based in landscape. I'm taking images that I see, you know, when I see an interesting texture, I'll take a photograph. I use a Adobe Illustrator as a process of reducing the image to kind of a minimal amount of color, or, you know, breaks it down. I'm usually looking at between 16 and 20 colors.
Okay.
Then I'm transferring it onto clayboard panel, which is a really beautiful, smooth surface, using there's a transfer paper called Soral. So I'm literally drawing the image onto the panel, and then I go in. And I'm going to show you this, but yeah. I use a very small brush.
Wow, that's tiny.
So it becomes almost like needlework. In needlepoint, there's a stitch called the long and short stitch, but it's very akin to that. I do needlework also, but and it it reduces the painting image, and it kind of abstracts it, especially when you're up close to the panel. Mm-hmm. When you step away, it becomes almost, you see more of the photograph. Mm-hmm. But when you're up close, you're kind of in a little world of small marks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what kind of landscapes specifically are you interested in? Of course, I know because I've looked at your work, but I think there's like a specific way that you're kind of thinking about what painting and needlework and these very minute details and moments can do when they're transcribed from photograph to painting. And I'm curious about kind of the way that your subject matter is involved in that conversation.
Well, what I've learned is just from making the work, you know, I think I probably started out looking for neater, tidier images. Mm-hmm. And what I found is kind of the gnarlier the image is, the better. Mm-hmm. And the more interesting the output is. So I'm looking at things that are not necessarily pretty. Mm-hmm. Some of them, every once in a while, it's like, God, I love this flower and I'm going to do it. But sometimes it's the things that are busy and mm-hmm. Not necessarily beautiful mm-hmm. that I think become the most interesting images. And, you know, I think about that kind of in parallel to how we see ourselves. Mm-hmm. And some of that is because I'm 62 years old. So I look at myself differently mm-hmm. and, you know, appreciate the lines and crow's feet. You know, there's a parallel there.
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I one of the things that I noticed about your work is just the intense layers. And, you know, when you hear the word landscape, my mind kind of more immediately goes to like a big sky and a viewpoint, mm-hmm. right? And really you're kind of bringing us in to the landscape. You're right. Kind of giving us this viewpoint that instead of sort of simplifying what we see, you're kind of bringing us into the chaos of what exists, yeah. You know, within the different layers of whether it's like a fernscape or kind of a scene of like brush or flowers or different things.
Yeah, those things are really interesting to me. Mm-hmm. In Rhinebeck, we have this, it's like it's a rocky surface. I mean, this is so different than the Gulf Coast of Texas. It's mm-hmm. one of the reasons I love it. Mm-hmm. But there's just all of these things growing on it. And you think about, the age of the stone itself mm-hmm. and all of these little specimens that have been brought by birds or, you know, how they kind of have evolved on this surface. And mm-hmm. those are the things that become interesting to me. Mm-hmm.
I want to read a little bit of one of the artist statements that I found of your work and have you kind of reflect on this a bit. It says, "When I was young, I spent a lot of time sitting with my mother watching her needlepoint. She was bedridden with an ongoing assortment of cancers originating from a metastasized lump in her breast, which led to her death at 37. The silk needlepoint she created is a physical object that I can hold, tactile evidence of her hand at work, an artifact that's proof of her brief presence on this planet. Like my mother's needlework, my process of making work is unhurried and contemplative." And you kind of go on to talk about this idea of, you know, memory and place and mark making. And I just really like this idea of connecting needlepoint and the legacy of your mother, but then, you know, using paint to express that for yourself, because that was the medium that you were kind of interested in. I would love to hear you talk, you know, a bit more about some of those memories of watching your mom needlepoint, and if maybe that was a big catalyst for your interest in art, or were you already kind of, you know, interested in art at that point?
You know, I think it's more about what I have from her. And, you know, I think a lot about just the idea of the process of making that stitch, or like quilt. You know, I have family quilts, and you think about, you know, what were they, what were these women, what were they thinking about when they were making these motions? And they're, you know, I just, and it's the same way that, you know, when you look at a painting, when you get up close to in a museum and you see the mark that the artist made, and it's just such a, it's such a tactile reminder of somebody's being, and you know, so I'm in my work, you know, I'm thinking about, I mean, that's why I'm, I call them artifacts, is these are things that when I'm no longer here, my children are going to have this and know that, you know, their mom made this mark. And I think that that, you know, it's a gift that people send out into the world, whether, you know, whether it was a needlepoint pillow or, you know, a handmade quilt or a smocked dress. You know, there's just something really wonderful and tactile. And, you know, it's like a, it's a genetic kind of component that, that you have out in the world. So.
Those are similar, you're kind of reminding me of what I think about with my work a lot too, in that I think those, the marks, the labor, the expression, it also, for many objects and many actions, it becomes proof of care, right?
Sure.
Like proof of, like, it's like a physical, like I, you know, often in my work, I think about my grandmother who was an epic pie maker, and just that motion of her crimping the pie crust, like out of homemade dough. Like, I just think of that, you know, and she may have been thinking about a soap opera or whatever, like who knows what was going on in her mind. She was probably gabbing with a girlfriend or smoking a cigarette. I don't know, you know, but just that like memory of standing at the counter, you know, watching her hands kind of crimp, like do this action over and over, that created a tangible object that her family then enjoyed. And I like, that is what I want my art to do, to be about, you know, just like actions with materials that are interesting performed over and over that create objects that will be about my legacy, you know, and be about, I don't know. I haven't yet figured out how to like tangibly bring in crimping pie crust into my work, but it may end up there someday. So did you start, did your mom teach you needlepoint? Did you start?
I did a little bit. I mean, I can remember, I actually have an old Christmas ornament that I made when I was young. It was something that I took up a little bit later, more seriously. There was a wonderful little needlepoint shop close to my house in Houston. And, you know, you learn those stitches, and I made stockings, and I've done pillows and, but that's, you know, I think that there's also kind of a nod to women in craft and, you know, all the makers who've kind of gone unrecognized and unsung for years and years and years. And, you know, what I love now is people using kind of these older model, you know, like quilt making, or Lauren Salazar using her weaving. And there are other people that are using literally needlepoint stitches, like French knots, that become part of, you know, the practice of their art. And I think that's just, you know, it's they're making amazing work.
Absolutely. Hi, friends. In this episode, you're going to hear Camille talk about the value of art residencies. And I wanted to share about an art residency program that you can join this month. On the Thrive Together Network, every year we host two art residencies. These are 6 week long programs, 2 weeks for planning and prep, and then 4 work weeks. And we would love for you to join us for our winter residency. The program starts January 23rd. That is the start of week one, as we kick off with our art and tea session on Tuesday, January 23rd at 1 p.m. Eastern. This is a Zoom session that you can join, where we're going to be getting our art residency plans set up. And then the following weeks will be prep and getting our materials organized. And then the whole month of February, we dive in, we commit to a project, we set up our goals, and we go after it. We spend lots of time in the studio, or maybe you choose a professional practice goal, like redoing your website. The format of the residency is quite DIY, which is amazing because we all have different things we're working on. We all have different goals. What we provide is the structure in which you can work on that goal, and of course the accountability of our virtual community for you to do it in progress with each other. It's so exciting to build off each other's momentum. And it's just such a wonderful way to really start your year. The work that I made in our winter residency last year, I ended up using in several shows throughout the year. So it was just such a great way to make a lot of progress during the first couple months of the year. Once again, we would love for you to join us for this 6 week program. And because you get a 2 week free trial to the network, if you are not already a member, you can join this program for just $45. Our monthly fee is $45. Then you get that 2 week free trial. So if you join us January 23rd, in time for Art and Tea, you'll get the full session, full 6 weeks of programming for $45, which is like amazing. Every week we meet on an accountability call on Tuesday at 1 p.m. on Zoom. Plus we give you some other materials to help you set your goals, to plan. And again, you'll have the access of the community to stay accountable. Dozens of other artists will be doing this along with you. And it's just really exciting to join in the fun and the momentum. So I hope you consider joining us for our virtual art residency on the Thrive Together Network. You can head to thrivetogethernetwork.com to learn all about it. There's a drop-down tab with the art residency information, and we would love to have you join us. Again, if you would like to access the full program, make sure you sign up by January 23rd, 2024. Okay, so now, Camille, let's go back to that point in time where you were a mother. I think you said you had two kids. You had had three kids. You had had, you know, a 10-year roughly career in architecture. You're kind of dabbling in, like, I think I might like to do some of this painting stuff for fun, but you're kind of dipping your toes in, doing a little community-based education with it. Where did you go from there? You know, like what was kind of happening around that time that maybe drew you to the practice of art making in a more tangible way? And kind of what happened next?
Well, for a few years, I mean, I was, I did not have a space at home. I was working mainly in oils. Glacel actually has a really, they have a great, and this was actually in their old building, but they had great spaces to paint in, and they were open on the weekends, and or, you know, you had free studio time. So I was able to do a lot of work there. And then I ended up building a room above a garage to paint in. And, you know, that's when you really started putting more, I started putting more time and effort into it. Mm-hmm. And then I went through a marital transition and I moved out of that house and I got a studio space. Mm-hmm. And this would have been in about 2012. Okay. Houston has a really good art community, and mm-hmm. this was an old factory. I'm sorry, a furniture warehouse that had been converted into studios. So I got my first studio space, and you know, I went every day. I mean, it was an important thing for me to get out of the house.
How old were your kids at that point?
So everybody was the nest was empty.
Okay.
They were, by this time they were in, I mean, for another 10 years or so, I was working at Clissell taking classes or using their studio space.
Did you work full time as an architect the whole time they were growing up?
No.
Okay.
They, and you know, in thinking about motherhood, mm-hmm. having lost my mother at a pretty young age, I was, 14. Mm-hmm. And she'd been sick for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I kind of allowed myself to immerse in that, those years, and be, you know, a football mom or a mm-hmm. choir mom or homeroom mom, and mm-hmm. just allowed myself to really kind of live in that moment. Mm-hmm. It was important to me.
Yeah.
Probably because I didn't have that as a kiddo. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of time spent there too. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once they were all out at school or out in the world, then I really was able to focus on myself and what I wanted to do. So
awesome.
Very lucky in that way.
Well, tell me more about that journey of kind of, you know, losing yourself in this motherhood identity, and then, and by choice, you know, mm-hmm. by privilege, by mm-hmm.
exactly,
by support and resources. I think for me, like, there has definitely been some reservations around feeling like, what is my identity? My identity, if all I am is a mom, kind of, which don't kill me for saying that, you know, like,
I know
capital M mom is like an amazing thing. And if that is all you want to lean into for a season of your life, I have no problems with that. But I think for me, it wasn't enough. And, and I think part of why I felt like maybe it wasn't enough was actually because I was concerned about the transition out of it. Like, like, what would it be like to lose yourself in your kids and this role? And then, you know, it, like, you can see the
finish line.
Yeah. Like, in a way, like, of course you're always a mom, but you know, there is this kind of big transition that, you know, needs to happen. And I think part of my reservation is because I know women who have really struggled in that phase in their life, and feel like they don't know who they are and they don't know what their identity is. And, you know, we're in a very identity driven society and culture. I just would love to hear from you about that transition. Like, was it hard? Were you just like so happy and like, you're like, I am diving into this? Or was there like some crisis and pain? Like, I don't know. I'm just curious to kind of hear about that time, because I've thought about it a lot, you know, and I think I've made my assumptions, that maybe some assumptions that I shouldn't have made, but I want to hear from you.
Well, I think that, you know, we are of two different generations. Mm-hmm. I think that I probably didn't give myself permission mm-hmm. to even question those things so much. Not you know, not like my mother's generation, but I think your generation is, I think you all have more freedom to kind of, you all inherently have a little different built-in dialogue, which isn't to say that you're not going to struggle about those questions, because I think that you're better at giving yourself permission to have that struggle.
You know, we have a whole program called Taking Up Space in our artist community. It's like, we're not afraid to take up space. At least we're working on that, you know, like we're kind of in
a great thing.
Yeah. Like we're kind of in this moment of, we know what our parents' generation was like, and we know what we want our daughter's generation to be like. And so we're trying to claim it, you know, like, I don't know.
And I think that, you know, isn't that a grand, I mean, it is a, it's a great thing, and it'll be great for your daughters too. You know, it was a kind of extra challenging time for me because of the divorce too. You really, you know, you reinvent yourself. Now, I will say that it was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because it was a push in a direction I didn't envision seeing my life going. But it forced some change. And I think in the long, the way, as I look back on it, it was just a gift. It was a gift. It was hard, but it was a gift.
I wish I could watch a movie about your life at that time, like just kind of this, you know, this woman.
It would have been really sad.
No, I think it would be so beautiful. Like this woman who raises three kids and puts all her life into that and into a marriage. And then, you know, you go through this like experience of, but who am I? Like, who do I want to be? What's the next chapter? Like, And like, you know, like I can like see the film of the day that you get your studio keys and you go down to the cool artist like warehouse. Like, I want to see that. I love that for you.
You know, that's one of the reasons my move to New York.
Tell me about that. How did you end up from raising your kids in Houston and having that chapter of your life being in Houston, and then now you're in New York, and I'm like, did she just move there because she's an artist, or like what is kind of the path there?
Well, I have my two daughters are both on the East Coast. One is in Brooklyn, and my other one is in Maryland. My son's still in Houston, but I did a design internship in the city in 84. Okay. Both my partner and I both did. We went to architecture school together.
Okay.
He graduated with a degree in architecture. So I've known Paul since, you know, 1979. Okay. And we reconnected. It's a whole nother story.
This is your current partner, not your correct. Your no. divorce, your ex. Okay.
No.
Okay.
You know, during the pandemic,
I need a movie about that too, by the way. Like that, you're just like giving me all these like movie ideas. Clearly I'm deprived of good 90s rom-com, like, you know, women's empowerment movies.
One of the things I did when I was single is I'd give myself my own artist residency. So yes. I did it both in Woodstock, New York, and then I also did it out in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh my gosh.
I did an Airbnb for a month. And, you know, in both places, and just set up and painted, and, you know, had friends come out. But it would have been in, 2018. I went up to Woodstock, and I've always loved New York. I've been coming back and forth to the city because both of my girls were there for a while.
Okay.
And you know, so it's always kind of been in the back of my mind as a place to go. In the last 4 or 5 years, I've just been desperately wanting four seasons in my life. You know, the Gulf Coast of Texas is pretty much summer, 9 months out of the year.
Yep.
There's just something really wonderful about change, and seasonally from an artist's point of view, because it's so visual. So Paul and I both turned 60 during the pandemic. And so we really started kind of thinking about this idea. He's still a practicing architect, and his work is all over. He was not specific to Houston. And his company has an office in the city, and he was able to make that transition. And so we kind of just took that leap. And, you know, here we are.
Wow. You're a risk taker, Camille. I love that.
No, I am not.
I don't know. You're not selling that to me.
I'm getting better at it. I was so not a risk taker for most of my life.
You moved into a completely new community at age 60 to pursue something you love and like seasonal change and your art. Like that's pretty risky, even though you did it with a partner, you know, like I
think. Which makes it easier. You know, I just, you know, when you get into your 60s, you know, you're at a different stage of your life. I wanted to have these experiences while I can still really enjoy them and have enough runway to enjoy it. You know, we bought this little cabin up in Rhinebeck and spent last year remodeling it. So I got to dip back into that.
Are you going to be on Cabin Chronicles?
Oh, no.
Have you guys ever watched that show?
Write this down.
Yeah, it's a show on Discovery Plus, it's on the Magnolia Network. So Chip and Joe, it's one of their Empire, you know, whatever. But it is like people who buy cabins, like the story of like cabins, you know, so like, and a lot of it is like architects and designers who like create like amazing cabins, you know, and a lot of them are set in New York, of course, because New York has such a great cabin culture kind of from people who have money, who live in the city and can afford like an upstate property. But yeah, you should check it out. It's a great show.
Okay. Yeah. I probably really like that.
Yeah, you would.
Well, I mean, with this, our intent is to retire.
Yeah,
up there.
I love
so that. It's just it's a very modest little place. But we had such a great time modeling it and, and going through that process together. So anyway.
So do you guys live in Manhattan or like closer to the city and then you kind of have the cabin there whenever you're able to access
Paul
it?
Is able. He has to be in the office when he's not traveling, which is a lot these days. But he is able to be remote 2 days a week. So we'll try to scoot up there
for like a long weekend or something.
Yeah. And be there Friday through Monday.
Awesome. Well, has it been everything you've hoped it would be living in New York? Do you know, like just for your art career and for the seasonal experiences that you wanted to have, are you happy with it?
You know, it's been a really amazing experience. It's amazing being in a city that has, and Houston has got a great art community too. But it's, you know, it's amazing to walk around, just the age of the city, you know, the crazy diverse community is also really interesting, you know, having the ability to get on a train and, go be in the woods, I'm a really lucky person. Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your painting practice. You said that you did needlepoint too. I'm curious if that practice is kind of just more of a craft practice for fun and for pleasure, or if that is a part of your, you know, your more quote unquote serious like studio work that you make?
It's for fun. Okay. And I thought about, okay, could I incorporate it? But, mm-hmm. You know, I think for now, one of the things I'm trying to get back to is I had a body of abstract work. Mm-hmm. One of the nice things about this little room I have upstate is I have a place, number one, that I own, and I can get paint on the walls and not worry about or the floor. But it's a place where I can stand and work. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm working off of a desk space in the city.
Okay.
So it's conducive to smaller panel work. You know, the needlework is really just for fun.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about your studio practice. Like, first, I'm curious how how you think about transitioning work between two spaces, even though, mm-hmm. you know, they're a kind of a car drive away. They're not mm-hmm. across the country or something. Like, I'm sure there is some, you know, just kind of like mental juggle of, well, am I going to the cabin this weekend to work or not to work? Or what if I mm-hmm. want to paint on this a little bit? Like, just kind of, mm-hmm. you know, do you ever find that to be a challenge, or is that just part of the fun? Is like, you know, do you leave certain things in certain places? Like, talk to me about kind of managing two studios, if you will.
Well, I mean, I do that. I'm, and I won't forever, because eventually mm-hmm. we'll be up there full time, but mm-hmm. there's definitely, you know, my oils are mm-hmm. up there.
Okay.
The big heavy body acrylics. The work I'm doing here in the city is with the little bitty paintbrush, mm-hmm. Liquid acrylics, and those in the clayboard panels, which are, they're a little fragile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they chip really easy. So I'm keeping that work here. The work upstate is, I'm not working on canvas right now. I'm working on rolls of paper okay. or UPO, things that are easier to move and kind of roll up. You know, we don't have tons of space up there. So,
okay.
You know, and it is a guest room. So it's there are lots of opportunities where it all needs to get kind of pushed out of the way.
Yep. I've had one of those before, a guest room studio.
So I'm kind of constantly thinking about things that are just movable, mm-hmm. Just making it easy to kind of put away.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, some of that a little bit speaks to the themes in your work too, just kind of this idea of presence and place and shifting and,
sure,
you know, like letting that be just a part of the conversation in more ways than one, I guess, is kind of interesting.
Well, and I also think that painting on surfaces that are less expensive and mm-hmm. less precious
mm-hmm.
it frees you up mm-hmm. in how you make it frees you to make mistakes,
mm-hmm.
You know, to make bad work.
Mm-hmm.
And I throw a lot of stuff away. Not so much the stuff I'm making in the city, but mm-hmm. you know, I give myself permission to, mm-hmm. I think that's how you have breakthroughs, is mm-hmm. by making some bad marks. And,
yeah, it's not all good. And I think,
no,
you know, sometimes I think that editing your own work, like, that is such a skill to build, such a muscle that you really have to, because, you know, not that we want to be overly critical, but not everything you make is good, you know.
No,
you can't have
not.
That in your mind either, you know.
No.
Yeah
the instructor that I had at Glacel would come by your piece and take a scoop of paint and make a mark on it just to force you to react.
Yeah. I like that.
And I thought that was such a valuable, a valuable experience.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm like, yeah. I mean, that would.
It does.
Definitely.
It's so important to wreck things. It's so important to wreck things.
And like, if you're working so hard on something and.
Yeah.
Woo, I can already envision that. Like my kids just, if I gave my kid permission, you know, and then it's like, what am I going to do with that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I love that. I love to, you know, talking about studios and transition. I love the fact that you created an artist residency for yourself, artist residency experience. And I want to bring this up because we have at the Thrive Together Network, the online community that I run, we have a virtual art residency program, and it is, you know, it's basically what you did back in the whatever, whenever you said you did it, like, but you don't necessarily need to do it in a separate location, you know, that like, but you could, like, we kind of offer this structure of here's 6 weeks. We're going to do some planning and prep. And then there's 4 work weeks and the community just kind of follows the same schedule together. And we just hold each other accountable and go through like the modules of, you know, just checking in, and we set our goals and then we get to work. And and I think for artist caregivers especially, but really any artist, it's like, it's just kind of setting you up for like a season of discipline, you know, like a season of like good habit building. And I love that you did that. And also that you picked two like super inspiring places to you and actually went there for a month. Like, that's amazing. I love that.
Well, and I will say that, you know, it's important to, or it was a gift to have this, to be in a different place, to have your work laid out where you, and I was lucky because I wasn't caregiving. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only person I had to take care of was me.
Yeah.
But you know, to have the work set out on a table with a view, you know, that's a, but I do think that it does become, you know, you have brackets around it, like, you know, you're dedicating a time and space, and even to do that virtually, I think that's a very good, thoughtful thing to allow yourself.
Yeah. Those brackets, I think, are a good signifier because you're kind of saying like, this is its own space that is important, and I'm giving my work time and energy. And you know, we've talked with our community before about how those brackets, they let you know too that it's not forever. Like, we're not putting the expectation on ourselves to work 60 hours a week in the studio all the time. Like, I think it's healthier to move in and out of like peaks and valleys within there, you know, and to kind of say during this time, I'm really going at it. And then during this time I'm taking a break and like, you know, just kind of normalizing our own needs and in the rhythms of being an artist, I think is important.
And doing it in community is also really nice too.
Yes. 100%. Couple more questions for you, Camille. I'm curious about your kids and how they've watched you go through this big transition of identity. Like, what's that been like? Are they so proud of you? Do they support your art? Like, are they like, what are you doing, Mom? You're an artist now? Like, yeah, I'm just curious about kind of that. Yeah.
It's really nice to have a built-in fan club. No, they've been very, very supportive. And I think they've seen the change in me. And I think that, you know, it's just really nice to have people who've got your back. And when it's people that you took care of, you know, for a number of years, it makes it equally special. But they are, you know, they sing praises on even the stuff that I don't think is that good.
Oh, that's amazing.
But they also, they've been yeah, very supportive in the changes that I've gone through. So,
and then the other thing I was thinking of, you know, you kind of talked about how you've moved into a season of being able to give some of that care back to yourself that you kind of gave away to others for so many years of your life. And I was just curious what that looks like for you, you know, like practically or just emotionally, like what are some of the things that you do to care for yourself well?
Well, I think that, you know, just on a day-to-day basis, getting out and walking, I think, which is, you know, you have, you do a lot of in the city, you know, but just to get myself out, I live really close to Riverside Park on the west side of the city, and, to get out in park space or to get outside upstate is really important. You know, to, I'm a big reader, you know, to have time with reading and actually really just, you know, the art practice is a really important part of that. I definitely know the days that I haven't been able to sit down and paint for a while. I feel it in my temperament and know that I'm missing some endorphins. So, you know, that is, that's the main ways I take care of myself.
Camille, tell me, is there anything you're kind of working towards in the studio, maybe a big project or a new skill, or do you have a show coming up? Like what are kind of like some goals that you have for yourself for the next, you know, near future?
Well, the one area that I am deficient in is putting myself out there in the world. I'm least comfortable with kind of the marketing aspect of
that's hard
art practice. Just from a, I don't know. It's just, to me, that's the hard part. I mean, not only from a, it consumes time and I'd much rather be sitting at the table painting, but it's also, you know, the rejection is all, is always hard. So one of my goals, you know, I don't have any shows coming up on the calendar just yet, but you know, I, especially since I've changed locations, to get myself out in the world a little bit more up here, is a goal. You know, I've been lucky to have some pretty nice little commissions. And, you know, hopefully I've had a few people, email in the last month about possible future commissions. So
awesome.
Awesome.
All right. Well, and I guess my last question for you before we do our final five is I'm wondering about your definition of success. You know, like what feels successful for you as an artist and just as a human? How do you kind of define, or what is your target for success?
You know, it's interesting because I think about this differently than I would have 20 years ago. And I think some of that is because I'm in my 60s. I just, you know, it's really the art making has become probably more selfish. It's really, I'm making it for me. It's always nice to have somebody come along in the world and see your work and express an interest in it. So that there's definitely, you know, there's that, that's a gift. But at this point in, you know, it's hard in all, with online communities, not to kind of, find yourself focused on the number of likes, or it's something I work on, you know, mentally every, you know, every day, just not to get wrapped up in that. And to, but I do think getting to the table, it's like, you know, with yoga, you just getting to the mat, you know, getting to the table and making the work is really what brings me the joy. So that's the success, is just getting to the table.
And doing it for yourself.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Final five. You can answer these as briefly as you want.
Okay.
Who is your biggest art crush?
Well, I have to say Joan Mitchell.
Yeah.
Just because she's such a badass. Mm-hmm. And her work is, the scale of her work is so wonderful, and the energy in her mark making.
Yeah. That's one of my favorites too, for sure. Big art crush on Joan Mitchell. What is a favorite place to travel or a dream trip that you'd like to go on?
Well, we went to Japan for 2 weeks in 2017, and it was just the most mind-blowing trip ever. I mean, if you can ever get to Japan, go.
Is the most answered on this podcast, but it's mostly people who haven't been and they're dreaming of going to Japan. So you're just confirming it. It's full circle.
It is that it's such an amazing country.
I would love to go there. Okay, tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
You know, I love all of the old Merchant and Ivory movies, Remains of the Day.
Yeah.
You know, they're just beautiful, beautiful movies. There's another movie called Days of Heaven. It was filmed in the Texas Panhandle. Okay. It's just really cinematic. I'm reading right now, I've got Rick Rubin's book. You know, that's a really interesting kind of lots of affirmations about creativity.
What is that? The act of being creative, or the creative act?
The creative act.
Yes. I started that one. It's good.
It's really good. I love Catherine May, who wrote Winter.
Yes, I love her writing
her books. Just so thoughtful. So, you know.
Yes.
Anyway,
great suggestions. Okay, what is your favorite meal?
Gosh, you know, I love a good breakfast taco, and I'm really missing that part of Texas.
I bet. Tex-Mex for sure. Not the same in Brooklyn or Manhattan.
No. Yeah.
Okay, and who would you like to give a shout out to for supporting your work?
Oh, well, I'd have to thank my partner Paul and my kids, you know, awesome. Mimi, Jack, and Margaret.
Camille, where can folks find you? Are you, tell me your Instagram handle and your website so people can find you, or if there's another place to connect with you.
No, it's Camille Warmington, Instagram, and CamilleWarmington.com.
Awesome. Camille, thank you so much. This has been a beautiful conversation. I can't wait for everybody to listen. And I just appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Kayla.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.